So even though they may not watch the fire live as you broadcast it on Periscope, when they go and they search Twitter for house fire, you want them to be able to see that, because the title that you choose on your Periscope shows up literally on Twitter. So your title needs to be something that's Twitter search friendly.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, and in studio with me today is Neil Augenstein from WTOP. He walked downstairs, and we're going to have a little conversation today about Periscope, the live streaming video app that a lot of people are starting to use and probably still have a lot of questions about. Welcome, Neil.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, how did you discover Periscope?
Well, Periscope was just invented last year, and it was invented within months of something called Meerkat. And they're both live streaming apps which are in which your phone is used as a camera, and you're able to point your phone toward whatever's happening and stream it to whoever is following you. This is not the first time that there's been live streaming. There have been lots of different software, like, for instance, Ustream, that's been out there. But what was different about this was that this was being tailored to mobile phones. This was being tailored to being able to quickly get a broadcast going that could be easily shared with whoever was interested in watching. So that was kind of cool. I think that I and a lot of other reporters were thinking, hey, we could probably apply this to covering a story. And as we found in the last several years, while there haven't really been that many applications and software that's designed specifically for reporters or for journalists, applying these kind of programs and apps that are meant for the general public, applying those to a reporter's job is really paying off.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. I've just stuck my toe into the Periscope waters recently, done a few things here for Federal News Radio, and watched a few things online. Like Friday night, I was watching pig races in Alabama. That's no judgment on Alabama. That just happened to be what was on when I turned on the app. So is there a real difference between Periscope and Meerkat? I know there was a lot of discussion a few months back in the journalism world about it.
They both essentially do the same things. I think that as time has gone on, Periscope is sort of targeting a different crowd than Meerkat, and that may be because of some of the things that for instance, Periscope is owned by Twitter, and that means that the most important thing right now about joining Periscope and broadcasting to your little network of people who are following you on Periscope is that you also tweet it to all of your followers. Now, since Periscope is brand new, in theory, you'd probably have a lot more Twitter followers than you do Periscope followers. And while you decide to begin your broadcast, you can click a little icon to make sure that all of your Twitter followers see that. And just to give you some background, so what happens is that when somebody sees your tweet, it will say live on Periscope, and then you might have typed house on fire on Jones Street, and so then people know that if they click on that link, they can watch your live coverage of that house fire, and they can watch it on a mobile device, they can watch it on their desktop. So it's really a very flexible and handy way to get your story out there. And for a reporter, who is looking for different ways of expanding his or her core audience. If for instance, since I'm a radio reporter, my goal is to get people to come to our radio station and also to come to our website, WTOP.com. By using social media and using Periscope, you draw in your potential audience through that. And if you're clever and if you do it right, you can keep ping-ponging people back and forth between the radio and online and the social media.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed that I liked a lot about it, it being live stream as opposed to, say, something like you're shooting video on, like, Instagram or something, which is very limited. You sort of shoot it, and then you can sort of share it out. It's happening live. It goes on as long as it is you're focused on it. And it promotes pretty quickly on Twitter, so that, you know, once you've decided what you're going to shoot and you start going, and people are able to come on and you know, they like it, and more, the more people that begin viewing it, other people will share it out, and it sort of grows, and it's a great way to sort of get audience engagement. Because we all know that photos and video are, you know, those are the types of things that people love to click on when it comes to Twitter and Facebook. So let's talk about how a journalist can use it. How have you used it up to this point?
Well, there are certain decisions that have to be made before you decide to Periscope, at least decisions that I consider. For instance, when you're doing something, when you're periscoping something, you're covering something live. Now, as a reporter, while I also want to cover stuff live, I also have to think in terms of, well, after I cover this story, is it going to live on my website? Is it going to live on the radio station for a longer period of time? One of the challenges about Periscope right now is that you can't embed it directly into a company's website. So, for instance, while my goal is to point people eventually towards WTOP.com, I can't embed a Periscope so that somebody could watch it live on the front page of WTOP.com. Now, there are different ways that I can share it. For instance, the company, the newsroom could retweet my tweet that has that shows that I'm broadcasting live, and then that will get all of WTOP's listeners, hopefully, to watch the video and be a part of that coverage right then. And again, if we do it correctly, we know that people will, after they watch something happen live, they'll want to come back and learn more about it as we learn more and more. So you have to consider, is this a story that can only be told live? Is this a story that I should shoot on my built-in camera, on my iPhone, and edit it, and send, send the best 30 seconds of it using Twitter video? Should I just be recording audio? Is this a story that doesn't lend itself to video? Then there are the whole issues about how you should shoot it. For instance, when Periscope and Meerkat were both introduced, both were vertical only. And the reason that they both gave was that's the way that most digital natives view a phone. And that's true. And so, you see most people and they're holding their phones straight up and down. Unfortunately for a reporter, we haven't lived in a vertical world. TV is horizontal. All TV news it continues to be horizontal. So when it started, you had to consider, is this something that I want to appeal only to a phone audience, or do I only want to appeal to a traditional audience that might be viewing the video on the website? And I think what we're learning over time is that it's best to be able to know how to do both, so that you can repurpose your content depending on the audience. And sometimes you prepare a different version for your phone audience. Sometimes you prepare a different version for your web audience. And thankfully, Periscope and Meerkat let you save your content, whatever video you're shooting, to your phone, to your camera roll. And then once you have it there, you can also re-edit it, or you could take out little bites and turn it into a project that will work on a different platform. For instance, there's even a nice app. There's an app called Crop that would let you easily take a vertically shot video and crop it very easily and turn it into a horizontal video that you can then upload to YouTube or to your station's website.
And that's all, you can do all that on your phone?
Yes, you can do all of that on the phone. So so you don't have to transfer from the phone to a laptop, right?
Yeah. Well, and it seems interesting because it was created by Twitter. Twitter works best in a mobile environment. It's creating video for mobile consumption. So it seems sort of logical that it sort of starts out that way. And then we as journalists are trying to find a way that we can sort of repurpose it to our needs. I know that there have been a couple of things that I've seen that TOP has done. There was a suspected active shooter up at NIH a few months ago, and you guys did a Periscope of the police briefing. And that was sort of an example of you being a radio journalist going in there and sort of fulfilling the role of the TV journalist going in and getting video to sort of accompany it and serve your readers in the moment on digital. So basically, because Periscope is an app, it's not the most difficult thing to learn how to use.
It's very easy to use. There are very few things that you need to do to get on the air. First thing that you need to do is you need to download the app and sign up for an account. And then then there are a few buttons on the bottom. One of them is a camera. You press that. You choose, and once you press that button, you see what's being seen through your phone's camera. You choose a title, and the one advice that I give to people when they're choosing a title is to choose one that's very searchable and very sort of factual and literal. For instance, if you're covering that house fire, you'd want to specify house fire on Jones Street rather than "You're not going to believe what I'm looking at now."
Yeah.
And the reason is because, A, you want it to be easy for people to find you right then when it's happening, but also what you're going to want is you're going to want people to be able to search that later. So even though they may not watch the fire live as you broadcast it on Periscope, when they go and they search Twitter for house fire, you want them to be able to see that, because the title that you choose on your Periscope shows up literally on Twitter. So your title needs to be something that's Twitter search friendly.
Because it shows up on Twitter, you can use hashtags. You can drop in a relevant web link or Twitter account in there as well. To sort of make it that much more rich.
Correct.
Maybe here's the live video. You put the link into the story that goes with it or to the website. So, check for updates later. Now, there's also, I know that you gave sort of an instruction to some of the TOP and some of the Federal News Radio reporters about how to use Periscope. And you mentioned this other app called, I think it's called Catch, spelled with a K, K-A-T-C-H. How does that work in concert with Periscope?
Okay, well, what Catch is, it's essentially an invisible app. It's really quite amazing, and I don't really understand how it works. But here's what happens. When you're getting ready to do a Periscope and you choose the title of your Periscope, you include the hashtag KATCH. Then, when you do your Periscope, it automatically uploads your video to the Catch server, which is very much like a YouTube. So your story is you don't even need to set up a Catch account. It just automatically uploads your video to the cache server. And what's great about that is that it does what Periscope doesn't. It makes it permanent. Right now, Periscope only keeps a scope for 24 hours, and then it disappears into, you know, into
the ether.
Into the ether. And as a reporter, since we want to be able to save a story and put it on the website and have it there tomorrow, the next day, and next year, Catch has been very helpful, because now what we can do is we can take a video. Once you choose to include hashtag Catch in your Periscope, then you automatically have a permanent video that you can embed, that you can share. It'll be there, you know, for as long as you want it to be. There are some things that you can do. You can set up a Catch account. You can go to catch.me, KATCH.ME, and you can set some settings. You can see all of the catches that have ever been caught. So all the periscopes that you've done and using this catch add-on. And what you can do, you can also check in settings, auto catch all of my periscopes. So once you do that, you don't have to type in hashtag catch. It'll just automatically upload it to there. Now, what Catch is doing right now, which within the last couple of weeks, they are responding to Periscope's decision to facilitate horizontal video as well as vertical video. So now the way that Periscope works is, regardless of how the user holds their phone, I'm sorry, the viewer, regardless of how the viewer holds their phone, either vertically or horizontally, the Periscope will appear beautifully in their phone. And one of the things about Periscope is that while they're also watching your content, people can also type their own comments, and those comments flow up on the left-hand side of the screen. In the past, before Periscope was facilitating the horizontal thing, you'd see people who decided to Periscope horizontally because they wanted the full screen effect, but people who tried to view the Periscope had to turn their head sideways because because the comments were only flowing in one direction. Now Periscope has really matured, and is whichever way the viewer holds the phone, it looks great. The only thing is that Catch is still in the process, they're halfway there, of being able to provide an embed code for the horizontal videos. It only works in Chrome right now. It doesn't work in other browsers. So other people who try to look at your cached video might be frustrated, and of course, you don't want to frustrate people who are trying to come to your content.
It's kind of amazing how quickly all this is sort of unraveling. It's like one service is sort of building off of the other and making the other better, which I guess is the whole digital philosophy. You take one aspect of something and you sort of make it better, and that's kind of where you create your identity as we try to figure out how to do this digital content. Before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about something that you were recently involved in. You were involved in the Hanagram podcast that was done. Now, was that produced by TOP or was that by someone else?
Well, CBS News 48 Hours asked me to produce a 5-part podcast about the Hanagram story. The Hanagram story is one that I've been covering since last year, almost exactly 1 year. She was a University of Virginia student who disappeared and was eventually found to be murdered. Her disappearance and her murder and the search for the person who allegedly did it was a very gripping story. We spent several weeks down in Charlottesville covering it, so we have pretty good institutional knowledge of the case. And 48 Hours came to me. They had interviewed me for the TV broadcast, and they had an idea about, wouldn't it be a good idea to do a podcast that might be used in the 5 days leading up to the Saturday night broadcast. So it was kind of a very open-ended thing. They said, you know, give us your thoughts. How do you think that this story arc can run? And it took more time than I expected, but we came up with a I think a nice podcast that tells the story in a different way than the TV broadcast. I think that they're sort of complementary, and that in the podcast I was able to take more time on certain aspects, the little things that might not necessarily make it into the TV broadcast. So and it's a little more conversational, a little bit more freewheeling than the TV broadcast. The model that was brought up to me was, have you ever listened to Serial? And of course, Serial is now the is really the model that everyone strives for. I had not listened to Serial. I listened to it for a bit. I thought about what would work in this case and how it would, how could I tell the story in a way that had some of the nice parts of Serial, but wasn't didn't try to duplicate it. And it's just a different way of telling stories, and it did harken back to old time radio, where you can, I made trips down there where I was just gathering natural sound for the podcast, and I was able to layer that in with my voice parts, and I thought it was pretty evocative.
How was the experience for you? Was it something nice, nice to do something different than sort of the day-to-day news that you normally do?
Yeah, I think it was. It certainly was different. It was great to be working with the 48 Hours folks. I mean, they really approached the TV aspect almost as if they were making a movie with the lighting and with the. Just the real attention to detail. But in terms of telling the stories, audio, it felt, each of these podcasts was anywhere between, I think, 12 and 17 minutes. It is the pacing is very different. In fact, I did, while I pulled all the sound bites and wrote my scripts, I did work with a producer on the final pacing of it. Because, 48 Hours, they do these hour long reports, and they know how to stretch something out and build the tension. So they, they'd written music for this thing. So we had, all this music to put in. And for a radio reporter who's generally trying to put as much information into a short report, I learned from watching them on how to stretch it out and how to pause it and how to make the tempo a little bit different.
So yeah, you were like, yeah, six episodes, 45 seconds each. I got that
right
down. But I think they wanted a little bit more.
Yeah.
Now, where can people find that if they want to download it or listen to it?
Well, they can go to 48hours.com, and we also have it on the WTOP page. They can download the five free podcasts. And they can also watch the TV broadcast.
Okay. Well, anything going on in the iPhone reporting world since we last spoke?
I think that what I'm noticing is that the sort of the trend seems to be toward doing fewer things but doing them well and easily. I'm seeing a lot of video apps which are making it easy and more intuitive to put together packages. The app that I've been using for 3 years, Vodio, VODDIO, has an impossible learning curve. Yet there are other apps which do things much more easily. You can do a video project without even once looking at at a manual. I mean, manual is the wrong word. Looking at an FAQ of how to use the technology, and to me, that seems to be the trend: making things easier and more intuitive, rather than function filled, rather than being able to do everything in a particular app. Some apps are just focusing on being able to do a few things very easily and very well.
Yeah, when you think of things like programs like Final Cut Pro, which were very, you know, when they first came out, it was, you know, they were pretty much designed for people who were doing video production, and they were very complex, and they were supposed to be done by professional people. And sort of the curve of that is it has been working more towards a greater adoption by making it easier for the average person to sort of learn it and master it. And I think that's just sort of the way that all this is going. That, you know, getting away from that old idea of, you know, the camera has to be so complex that only certain people can master it. But now we're getting to a point with digital photography and all types of things that just making all of us better photographers, better producers, it makes our process that much easier and our end product that much better.
I think that the thing that we should all remember, though, is that all we're doing is telling stories. This, again, the iPhone is just a tool for telling stories, and you got to have the ability and the vision to be able to tell a story creatively.
Okay. I think it's a great place to end. Thanks a lot for coming in, Neil.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can also download episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter at All Journalism. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.